Okay, it is time for the Burning Platform Thursday mornings, our chance to catch up on all the things that have happened this week. And because we're in the lead up to the elections, which have been announced for the 29th of May, what is that? It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
So they make it in the middle of the week so that most of us will pitch up.
So that you don't go away for the long weekend.
Right, because that'll happen. Both rich and poor, black and white, old and young, if people see a chance for a getaway, they will be in dereliction of their voting duty. They will disappear for the weekend.
Go away on the weekend.
Start drinking.
Although you could go on a short weekend. No, you could go on a short weekend close by. Like if you went to Magaliesburg. As long as you're in the province.
Don't tempt people. We must all do our duty this year. All right, so she has been she's been on Johannesburg's mayoral council. She's been the speaker. She was in COPE. She's also now the executive president of the South African Rainbow Alliance, a pact comprising like-minded minority parties, civic organizations, churches, and faith-based organizations across South Africa. It's a good, strong coalition that. We last spoke to Colleen when she was on the mayoral council. And that was in October of 2021. So much has changed. And she is our guest this morning on the Burning Platform. Colleen Makubele. How are you, Colleen?
Good.
It's nice to see you. It's very good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning for me.
Hello.
Thank you to the audience and the viewers.
So first of all, I love the jumpsuit. That beats the hell out of all the other parties with their rubbishy little T-shirts.
Thank you so much, especially the yellow and the red ones. Beats them all, the blue ones.
Yeah.
We tried to go for fresh, appealing to young people, you know, people that do not vote so that they get interested.
So shall we just start off with Sarah? I see your posters up all over the place. Mm-hmm. The South African Rainbow Alliance. You didn't go with the word party. You didn't go with any of the buzzwords like democracy, peoples, this, constitutional, that, patriot, this. You didn't choose any of those. You went with Rainbow Alliance.
Rainbow Alliance.
Sounds like it could be like a gay pride parade, but tell us why you chose the name.
Rainbow is very significant because we are a non-racial party. We want to do away with any divisions. We've been sliced and divided as South Africans for too long, whether along the lines of religion or race, you name it, and poor, rich. We think it's time that we put away all of those categories and labels and come together in this rainbow that Madiba had a dream about and just rekindle and reclaim that. And we also stayed away from your typical struggle colors and spears and, you know, yellows and green African flags, etc. Because we think politics have actually moved from that liberation struggle, guerrilla movements and all those socialist ideals that people dreamt and, you know, debated on. We're in a different era that we need to face the future. We are a fresh party that wants to look at how do we turn around this country to be prosperous for all of us, that the so-called Dinswalo must be able to find a space, a prosperity. The so-called James, who's sitting somewhere else, must find this country to produce opportunities for them, find jobs, express themselves, integrate globally, integrate continentally. Let's create a new South Africa that all of us can relate to and join together with.
Okay, so we'll move into the future in a minute with Sarah, and we'll find out exactly what you guys are going to stand for and what you care about. And what you want to represent. Mm. But before that, there are two small Lanyala skeletons in the cupboard that you always have to address. And the one is COPE.
Yeah.
And the other one is Speaker of
the
Council here, which there was so much controversy around these things. So let's just start off with COPE. How did the split happen? Who let who down? You tell us your side of the story.
Look, it's unfortunate that I have to keep repeating this. It's fine. It's important. And it has not even been disputed. President Tera Lukota unfortunately lied, when he came out in the media to say he knew nothing about Sarah. He's been at the center, of the creation of Sarah. I walked with him very close to the old man. Even the Sunday before I was fired, which I didn't know I was going to be fired, I was at his house and we meant to talk about the meeting that we're going to have on Monday with other coalition partners. He was instrumental to call various presidents, you know, that are set in meetings with him and them, convincing them about this, Sarah. What pained me the most, and it's on the footages because we were filming this on our YouTube channel. You know, he stood up in one of the meetings and we had different church leaders. And he said, if we can get this Sarah, this South African rainbow, whatever we call it, at that time we had not decided on Sarah, it was still super packed. If we can get this thing going, I'm going to go to my grave a happy man, because it carries all the aspirations and the dreams of us who fought the freedom struggle, not just me, but those who died, you know, in exile, along the road, in guerrilla warfare, etc. This is what South Africa needs. We all stood up and clapped and were moved by that. And it did something to us as young people, because we wanted to say, how do we rekindle what everybody dreams South Africa ought to be compared to what we have? And to a certain level, that's why we honored him. We said he was going to be president emeritus. You know, love the old man. I still do. I learned a lot from him, but he did let me down very, very badly in the most humiliating way. But I think, wanted to be the president.
He wanted to be the president.
He wanted to be the president of this alliance. And it just...
But they voted for you.
They voted for me because the idea was that South Africa needs fresh, new, competent, morally clear leadership that people can relate to. Young people, who are the majority of this nation, must be able to resonate and see themselves in the kind of leadership that we bring. We've got a lot of people that left. Even originally, all of us are from the. Most of us are from the ANC. There's a reason we left.
And we give credit to Mosiwa Lekota. He was one of the first people to walk out and say,
yes.
You know, Bantuhola Misa was the first.
Yes, yes.
All those years ago. And now Mosiwa Lekota.
Now Mosiwa walked. And for the same reasons that most of us have eventually walked out. And he was proven right in his assertion of what was coming, you know. And all of us walked out because of that. And mainly because we just don't see a space for young, competent leaders, morally clear leaders in the ANC. It's not a party for that. And we give credit to what they have done for the country. I think their time is just finished. Without bashing them and all the issues, their time has just run out.
Right, but then I'll say this, because you don't have to. And you've been very clear about this. You've stuck to the same story, which is great. But I got to say, like, as someone who once voted for COPE and who finds Mosiwa Lekota to be a very smart, very charming, very... very dignified old man. It's what he is. And I don't like saying old man, because I don't want to be ageist. But the reality is, it does sound to me like he has a lot of fallouts with a lot of people. I mean, remember in COPE in the beginning, it was Mbazima Shiloa. That fell out because the two of them were squabbling over leadership.
Yeah.
Ever since then, there have been more and more people who he's had problems. It wasn't Willie Madisha at one point was also a problem. They had a fallout. You know, eventually, if... you are getting the same kind of reaction from person after person after person. It might just be you. Maybe that's why Mosiwa Lekota's got to stop treating COPE as his retirement.
Okay, we have to stop talking about Mosiwa Lekota.
Okay, we will. But I mean, we needed to get this out of the way.
Well, look, I think that there are a number of other things that we can talk about with regard to, because when you started, Sarah, it was an alliance of various compositions, and it was supposed to be a pact of smaller parties, particularly in the Joburg Council. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. No, certainly. But you know, just to wrap up on Lekota, I think it's also an indication of African leaders, and I dare say especially male leaders, who don't know when it's time to exit the stage, when to hand over the baton. And it does tarnish their legacy and their brand, you know. And I think that's something to reflect upon for not only Ntateli Lekota, a lot of the ANC and other leaders sitting in the council and in the national assemblies. It's right. Serious thought. But yes, it still is, Sarah, that alliance of various minority parties. and with civic organizations, etc. We've had parties that, in fact, at the start of this, we've spoken to almost all the parties that are represented in the National Assembly. So hence, it's not just the Joburg Council. We looked at the National Assembly because now we are dealing with province and national politics. It's no longer the local politics. And hence, we needed the presidents to sit around the table at the time and have agreements. So President Lekota and President Godi of APC at the time were tasked, even myself, I was part of their team, you know, as a facilitator, etc., to then facilitate all of these presidents from UDM and, you know, PAC, ACDP, all of them were contacted, even the Bosas, Shiluvas, some of the newer ones that are, you know, aiming for the high office. And the idea was all those 1% and less parties, which is about 9 of them, and most of them, we differed ideologically. And it was okay, you know, APC, PAC, ATM, they believe in, some of them land first and Africanism, they want to push a different socialist ideology. And we respected that because it doesn't find space where we are. We believe in neoliberal policies, market-friendly policies. We believe the important things is jobs. Land is good, is important, but it's not what young people need. If you're unemployed, over 3 million young people unemployed, even if I give you a piece of land right now, there's nothing that you're going to do about it. People want food on their table. They want money in their pocket. They want to feed their children, take them to good, clean hospitals. So we prioritized what was important for us. Some fell off because they felt, look, they'll go at it alone, you know. And we had those kind of parties that told us that, like, Bosa fell off at the time, Shiluva fell off at the time because of that. And those that remained then started, COPE was one of those that remained, came back and said, look, we've consulted with our structures, and it's there on record. We've consulted with our structures. We're happy. Let's proceed. Let's register this alliance, etc. Where you are also correct is that a lot has changed since then. We're fired from COPE. Then Sarah not only became an alliance of parties, it became a political party that stands on its own. I'm a member of SARA. We've got a lot of people that have joined as individuals who are members, and then we still have parties, we still have different churches, etc. So it's now a fully-fledged party and operating like any other normal political party.
With all the infighting, I mean, I think just a couple of weeks ago, you've already got lots of reports around fighting with the AARM, with ICM, and them coming out and saying actually that you
actually that was wrong reporting.
Wait, I'm not done. because that's not the question. Coming out to say that they feel that the way that the party has now been shifted is it has become a bit of a COPE 2.0, and that there's not enough consultation happening within the party, which is a very worrying thing. At the very beginning of a party, it's literally been 3 months, and already you've got this kind of infighting that other bigger, older parties also have.
Look, that's why I'm saying to you, it's incorrect. Even the reporter has been taken to task to withdraw that story. It was a rumor that was flying. Nobody has, even Joe Mujapil, the president of ICM, has written a letter. He's never responded to any of those stories. We don't know where the reporter gets it from, even WhatsApp messages. Actually, we're taking legal action as a collective against that. So Manyani must answer, and we're talking to the editor. Even Iqbal has been written a letter. Because it's things like that that people create stories. You know, if you, and we've seen this kind of infiltrating to kind of create a story to destabilize the public around what SARA stands for. And there's no infighting. We are not fighting with Joe. Joe is still employed. He's still in the city of Ekurhuleni as a councillor. He's leading the minorities there. That story is false to the core. We're accused of having received 15 million rand of donation. There's no such. If we would have declared like Rasmus said there. So people have created, because they see our posters, and therefore there's money, and people are creating stories. We're infighting. It is false to the core. You know, as I sit here, I'm actually, I even released an article in Citizen 2 days ago. We want that money. We want businesses to fund us. White business, black business, especially black business, must not sit back and wait for administration to get tenders. They must get involved in political activities and fund the political change that we want. That story is false in every respect. So that's why I'm saying to you, don't read things like that and then make opinions where I have not commented on it. Joe has not commented on it. I'll send you even the letters that we've sent, legal letters, to say retract that story. And we're waiting for Sunday Tribune to do that. Where did they get it? Who gave them that story? It's not true.
So who does fund you at the moment?
Look, we've got several small businesses that do fund us. Nothing really to declare. We are funding ourselves as the presidential committee. Most of the things that you see, we're funding it ourselves. We are raising funds. We are speaking to everybody, you know, from if you talk white business, whether it's the Oppenheimers, whether it's overseas funders, local funders. We want funding. This is a very expensive exercise. And it has not been easy up until now.
But you mentioned the political party posters, which we see up, and you've probably got more of them up in Sandton than anyone else. Right, Pums?
Yeah.
I mean, good for you.
What is Joburg?
We invested a lot on that. Not only here, nationally. You know, we invested.
That's expensive.
Very expensive. And we've got people that have given us the loans to be able to do that, you know, and they assist us in terms of how we order this thing. That's how we've managed to do it, because they believe in the vision. And once we get the funding, then we must pay for it. But it's people that say, look, we don't have cash for you. This is our business. And several of them, it's not one. We can print posters to the value of this. We can print you T-shirts. We can do this for you. And we love that. And people are volunteering. If you see people all over the place and, you know, the spirit that has been ignited is volunteerism. Unemployed graduates are on the ground every day pushing this vision, pushing this agenda. People are spending their money, they're sacrificing. I've sold, I don't know how many things. You see, I don't even have jewelry on me because I've pawned everything to make sure that this happens. But it's because we believe it's time that as young people, young South Africans, we take and reclaim our future. Instead of sitting and complaining and then point fingers at those who stand, let's do something.
What does that look like in terms of policies? If you were to say the top three policies that you are about, what are those?
We have adopted the gear that President Mbeki had between 96 and 2007. We've repurposed it, obviously, because material conditions have changed with COVID. We no longer have PRASA. We no longer have Transnet. We no longer have ESCOM. Things have just, SAA, you know, flies on bales as well. So it's so bad. But we've taken those policies that had worked, gear for growth. One of the key policies is market business-friendly policies that we are pushing. We don't believe in this agitation and pushing away business, white monopoly, and going into the socialist side. No. We need business to create jobs. And this private sector is the biggest creator of jobs. And we believe that we need to privatize some of the state-owned entities that are not working. There's no point to have a PRASA that is dilapidating. The country is running on 1 trillion rand debt. 1 billion rand we pay daily on this. So one of our key policies is how do we turn around this debt situation using the very same policies of gear that President Mbeki implemented so well, so that we don't fall into the debt trap, right? And second, of course, is employment. Gear, E is for employment. How do we turn around the employment? One of the key things is job security, and we have to deal with the labor laws. Our policies is to review those labor laws, relax them, especially for SMMEs, for businesses that want to create employment. A, accountable, morally clear, competent, merit leadership. We don't compromise on that. What you did, and we'll get to the city of Joburg. What we did with the city of Joburg, with all those incompetent mayors, I'll talk to it. It cannot happen in national. It cannot happen in province. We have killed cities because of that. Look at from our president down to the cabinet. You can hardly point to anyone competent enough to do their job. R, the policy of redistribution. We do believe that there are those that deserve grants. They need to get grants, and proper grants, not 350. If our policies cannot create employment for you, we're going to give you the basic income grant. And a doctor cannot queue for 350 rands. It's an insult. We have to be able to give proper grants. unemployed single men is one of the areas that we are targeting. And we've seen the highest suicide rate is around unemployed, especially black men. And the highest unemployed employment is amongst them, because police are favoring me and you. We're black women. We get most of the opportunities. We get ahead. They are sitting depressed. They can't get opportunities. Some of them are raising children. They're dependent on their mothers, their grandmothers to raise children. Why are we not looking after those children as a nation? You know, so those are some of the policies that we are putting our top four.
That's okay. So you've laid that out quite well. I mean, I see you also, you say that you want to increase basic income, increase SASA grants, you want to lower the debt. You care about unemployed single men in particular, which I think is interesting. Nobody else has really spoken about them much. I mean, we talk about unemployed youth in general, right?
Because unemployment is a widespread problem, you know.
Sure.
So, and I wonder how that actually pans out. There are more women than men registered to vote. So I wonder if it's just as much of an interesting topic for them.
Look, you know, registered to vote. I would argue to say there are more women eligible to vote.
No, registered.
Yeah.
I'm talking about IEC statistics. More men than women.
Yeah, more men. I agree with you.
More women than men.
Yeah.
Registered to vote. IEC statistic. That's okay.
And it's fine. I think it's debatable. We'll look at it. But everywhere we go, more men are at the front. Women have to be pushed, and they are more women. If women go out there, register to vote, young girls, I talked to cashiers. One of our policies is around cashiers and how we look after them. That is 40% of our labor force is the cashiers, and most of them look like you and me. It's black women, whether Indian, colored, whatever. It's black women. Most of those women, if we did not do the push that we did, we're not even registered to vote, unaware of what is happening. Voter registration, especially among women, is very, very poor. And they are the most people that will benefit out of voting right, because they're the most frustrated, you know, with some of these laws, especially cashiers who are not looked after, you know, no pension, no protection for them.
I think it's worth taking stock of the fact that you are one of very few female leaders. You know, we've had our female leaders in the past. There have been some very prominent women in politics. I mean, we had the, what was that party? I always forget them in KZN.
NFP.
Yes.
NFP. They were one of
the late NFP.
That's right. Magwaza, and then Helen Zilla, obviously, for the DA. Mampela. We've had a few. Mampela Rampele. But like, here you are there any other women at the moment who are presidents of their parties?
Look, I don't know of them.
I mean, it's interesting. I'm not saying it's essential, but it's interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. It is, yeah. I know one, actually, AMSA. AMSA, there's this party back in KZN. They're not actually competing. They've just started as well. She's approached us to align with us. But hardly any, significant parties making waves.
They all have lip service when it comes to this stuff. Yes, they talk about GBV or whatever else.
You know, Gareth, it's not easy for women. I must tell you that. Even for me to come here this morning, I drop my children at school, you know, every morning. I had to then make arrangements to make sure that I'm here and somebody must then be able to drop them. And even funding for women parties, it's not coming through. They'll rather fund. I mean, you look at, compare myself and Mashaba, for instance. I bring more to the table, and I dare say that I can sit with him and tell him that in terms of competence, experience, qualities, moral clarity. But you'll rather put 10 million with Mashaba than with Sarah. Why? You know, you look at all of them, even Bosa. I'm asking myself, what is it that you've seen from him that is different, that is adding to the table? And I'm not saying this to shame them. I'm saying that to say it's important that you understand why less women are sitting here. Because for me, I must sacrifice everything that I have to make sure this works. You know, they get easily funding. Easy, not even making the waves that we are making. And also the social aspect of it. I won't be able to, you know, I would love to travel the whole country all the time, be out there. I'm a mother of two. I must, think of my kids, be home. I'm not saying fathers don't do that, but mothers are more, you know, responsible for the household, Colleen, and looking
I've
after kids.
I've actually just pulled up on the IEC app. In the 18-19 age bracket, 245,000 men are registered, 318,000 women. In the 20 to 29 bracket, 1.9 men are registered, 2.4 women.
I'm happy. That's excellent.
In the 30 to 39 bracket, 3.1 million men are registered, 3.6 million women. So
I'm
more
happy
women
about
register.
That.
They outperform in every single category, right up to over 60.
That's excellent. They must go out and vote now. I'm excited about it. Let them go out and
all right,
vote.
What are your realistic chances? Because you're competing nationally.
Yeah.
So you're on the national ballot. How many seats are you looking at here? How many votes in total are you looking at? What would you consider a success?
Look, we are looking at a minimum. If we can get about 15 seats, we would have done well as a new entrant to the party.
So what percentage is that roughly of the
that's
national?
That's about almost 10%.
That's ambitious.
No, it's very ambitious.
What
and we don't think it's
you
impossible.
Can get that?
Look, it's the strength of the alliances, the partners that we have on the ground.
Who are they?
You mentioned churches. How important is that?
Very, very important. Look, South Africa is 80 to 85% Christian. You know, a lot of the people that we want to reach and talk to are in the churches. And when we align the values that we want to project, that we carry, and the policies that we want to push with what the church believes in, what the pastors believes in, they open up for us to go and talk to their members. And we find a lot the Christian community in its spread, you know, and I'm talking Christianity ranges from a born-again Christian to Anglican, Catholic, ZCC, you know, it's a whole spread. Most of them resonate with the policies that we are putting on the table. And we're not saying we're going to sweep all 85% of them, no, because there are many other parties that also, you know.
Oh, there are lots of old relationships between the ANC of these churches.
Yeah.
So are you confident you can get a few of them, though?
We are confident, and we are seeing it as well, you know, the responses. Of course, we won't be on the ballot box with everybody who's going to make a tick, but there's a lot of church organizations that have given their support, and they've actually endorsed what we are doing as well. So I just trust that we sustain and maintain these relationships. And when they get to the ballot box, they remember
us. Okay, so the Christians, who else?
We've got the Christians mainly, that is our market. We've got ICM as an alliance partner as well. And we've got AMSA that I spoke about as our alliance partner as well. We've got traditional leaders that we have in Gwandebele. We've got Chief Mgiba. We've got the Bakgatlas in Bakgatla Bamusetla in the Northwest Makapanstad. We've got the traditional leaders in Giani, where I come from, and churches around there. You know, Osi, I can name them Komu, Homu, what do you call them? Mageba and Saniki. You know, there's a lot of different. Yeah, so we've been on the ground to do that work. Look, we're not claiming, is sweeping success all over to say once you've spoken to the chief, endorses you, the community is there. Therefore, you know, it means everybody is going to then put a cross, you know, on Sarah. But we are claiming that we are going to get some numbers there. People will have a choice of who they talk to. You know, even in a church, there are some people who are benefiting from the ANC. They may come and say, hallelujah, amen, we're with you. But they know my bread is buttered here. So they're going to go and vote where they vote.
So we were just talking about the party lists, which is the next big thing that's going to be coming up. I'd be very interested to know, you're hoping to get 15 seats. Who you fill those seats with?
No, we have a whole team that we are going to fill the team. We've got a nominations committee that is processing, and I stand to be corrected. They can correct over 350 applications that have come through. 350 applications, and these are professionals, these are unemployed graduates, these are social activists, these are people that are community leaders. You know, some may not have the educational qualifications, but they are community leaders that are verified. So it's a task that is huge for the team that are looking at the list. So once that is finalized and it cuts across national, provincial, and in all the different provinces.
I think before the, you know, name recognition is a very important thing when it comes to any kind of branding, any kind of purchasing decision, any kind of voting decision. Before the local general election, I don't think anybody would have heard the name Coleen Makubele. What is it that you think will get South Africans across the board to vote for a party name they've never heard before and people's names they've never heard before? What is it that will get them to vote for you?
Look, I think people have known Colleen and what Colleen brings to the table and what Colleen can do. I understand about Sarah, we're building the brand. And Colleen has stood for competence, has stood for clean governance, has stood for moral clarity. They don't call me the speaker of the people in the city of Joburg for nothing. It's because they have seen my work on the ground with the people that have expressed immense confidence for the different parties in the alliance to sit and say this is a leader that we want to rally behind, you know, and I think it's a huge showing of confidence, which is humbling. So I'm not concerned about that. The brand will build. And I think South Africans are not even looking for name recognition, as you would say it. My experience on the ground is not that. Yes, ANC is out there, etc. But we are disgusted with all of the names that we see and hear about, because South Africans are looking for change that is credible. Change that promises something that, you know, resonates with them and their aspirations and desires. You look at even, you know, some of the newer parties that are making waves and respect what they're doing, even Rise and Sonia Zizibi. It's not a name that you recognize, but people resonate perhaps with him in terms of what he's bringing to the table. I think the political climate and the electorate of South Africa has so evolved such that they are not interested actually in those names that you are talking about. They are interested in somebody that they can connect with, relate with, somebody that they know they can also hold accountable. And that's why they are responding to us.
So there are a couple of comments here, Colleen, and I think we want to go to some of the questions. Some of our listeners here are single-issue voters, so they want to know, for example, someone here says, so you have nothing to say for the secular middle class in South Africa? Kulu and Congo Chris asking about that. Someone wants to know your stance on Israel. Someone else wants to know your stance on BEE.
Yeah. Let's start with the middle class. I think we have a lot to say about middle class. I was asked to give our top three, and I actually gave the top four, you know, of some of the policies that we have. We're launching our manifesto around the 16th of March, but it will be confirmed. And then you'll get to hear in full detail what we have to offer for the middle class. What are the middle class concerned about? The middle class are concerned about the quality of education, the quality of healthcare. They're concerned about the security of their job, the economy that must work, crime. And those are the things that we're going to address. What are they concerned about? SMMEs, you know, we've got, as I said, we want to give tax breaks to SMMEs up to a certain threshold. We want to give labor laws relaxation for some of those SMMEs and big businesses as well to create jobs so that we are able to alleviate some of the crime that we have. We're able to feed the people that we have that are loitering around. And middle class is concerned about when my child graduates, will he find a job? Will he find opportunities? Will he find a country? And that's what we are trying to resolve here. Can we find a country with all of these things that are happening with AGOA, Israel? You I'm bringing in Israel. We are standing a good chance that in the next 2-3 years, we are going to see the impact of what South Africa has done, you know, in terms of the ICJ and the impact of the relationship. Our biggest trading partner is AGOA, like it or not. I don't know what is your stance on the West and what monopoly capital, whatever. Our biggest trading partner is the West. And if we're not able to manage our relationships with all our stakeholders intelligently, not swayed by emotions and where your money comes from. You know, you must be able to be a leader that is sober when you deal with issues. And what we did with the ICJ, I'm not in a support of it, but I do condemn killing and violence. Hamas killing. Israel retaliated in a manner that also went extreme. But there was a reason why they retaliated. If we're going to take anyone to ICJ, let's take Hamas as well. Why are we condoning terrorism? We are for peace. We want all the communities to be treated equally. We don't support the singular stance of South Africa in dealing with one country and one country alone. We need everybody to find peace. We need to work with everyone, including the West. Let's not agitate people that are bringing a lot of value also into the country. We respect China. We respect Russia. If they bring value, we want to work with them.
Okay, so and BEE? Where,
look, BEE in its current form is not working. It has created inequalities. BEE has created a huge inequality between the senior cadres and senior officials of the ANC and our 18 to 20 million South Africans. It has to be reviewed. It has not benefited anybody except for those that are connected. I'm for transformation, and there will be transformation, but it cannot be done at the expense of the country the way it has been. It cannot be done to benefit only a select few the way it has been done. I think we need to review all of that and go back to say, how do we transform South African society so that we all share in the prosperity? We all create opportunities for all South Africans without creating inequalities that our children must then look at creating. And also isolating and the white community, the Indian community, the colored community. We have sliced and devised this country enough. BEE, with all of its good intention, has failed this country.
South Africans are tired of hearing people make promises. They're tired of hearing all the rhetoric, particularly around this time of the year. And unfortunately, the ANC has two parts of a coin to tell. So people can look at the ANC and say, I now have water, I now have electricity three times a week or whatever. When people look at Colleen, and they say, well, in Joburg, we don't see what she did in Joburg, and eventually she was expelled out of her position in Joburg. Why should we believe that she can hold it together to get to national?
Look, I would say I was expelled for a different reason, not that I was not doing anything. There's never been a speaker in the city of, and I dare say nationally, that has done to the great extent what I have done in the city of Joburg. Nobody knew of the role of the speaker until I came on board. Nobody even spoke of a speaker. No, I'm telling you. No, it's true. It's true. Because
people didn't know the role of a speaker.
No, most didn't. Maybe you would have known. You can speak for yourself in a couple. But a lot of people started to understand the role of the speaker when I came on board because I was visible. I began to hold people accountable, especially the executives accountable. I was not popular, believe me or not. I'm hated in that coalition that I was with because I stood for what I believed was the principle was correct. We even fought when it came to who do we put at the forefront, because I had even raised my hand even to be the mayor because I could see that this is chaotic and disaster. So in terms of really serving the citizens of Joburg, I was first in line to respond to any issue, any crisis in the city. I was there. If you ask the NPOs around the city of Joburg, because I'm not service delivery, don't expect me to have given you water and electricity, etc. It's not the role of the speaker. In terms of the role of the speaker legislated, I have excelled in all of those. That's why you would know there's a speaker, this is what she's doing. People will be able to understand. NPOs knew where they stood. Citizens understood. We did civic education. I held executives to account. There was order. And there was really clean governance, you know, in terms of running of council and the matters of council. I don't know what is happening now. In terms of the role of the speaker, I dare you. Bring the evidence. I will dispute it. And I've done a lot. I was not expelled because I was not doing a good job. I was expelled by COPE for the reasons that I alluded to earlier. Mm. So that cannot be correct.
So the two areas that I'm really interested in, which you've highlighted, which I don't hear any of the other parties really talking about, and you've already hinted at one with the traditional leaders. We'll get to that in a second. Because I do think it's an interesting part of South Africa that we need to pay attention to. We have supposedly a House of Traditional Leaders, the second house in our parliament, but they really are just a rubber stamp in so many ways for what comes before and after them. But the other area that you talk about is the informal economy, which I think is an important and interesting thing in South Africa. We have no idea. We had the budget speech yesterday, and you know, we talk about big business and big corporations, and we even talk about SMMEs, small businesses. But what we don't pay any attention to is the cash economy, the township economy, the informal economy, which is a huge part of South Africa and provides probably a lot more employment than the official records would suggest.
Yes.
So let's start with the informal economy, and then I want to hear your thoughts on traditional leaders, because you've got some ideas there as well.
Yeah. Look, we're very clear that we want to protect and grow the informal economy. You said it right, because it's the biggest job creator at the moment, and it will be. And if we don't assist the informal economy, not only to create jobs for foreigners in this country, that's where we have lost it, and we're going to continue to lose it. We need to work with them, assist them, grow them, so that they are able to create jobs for locals. A lot of the fights that you have in our townships where people are taking our jobs is because it's happening in that spaza shop there. It's happening in that little restaurant by the corner there. It's happening in this service station that is owned by Colleen in the corner there, etc. And if we're able to say, and it comes back to the labor laws, that's why we need to review these labor laws. The mistake that South Africa has made is to be run by unions to the detriment of the country, to be run by the likes of SACP, the Communist Party, to the detriment of the country. Because most of these labor laws that are unsustainable, that nobody can be able to uphold, etc., especially if you are in the informal sector, they run to employ foreigners so that they don't have to comply with them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be able to, you know,
and then obviously that's bad for the foreigners and it's bad for us.
I'd rather you give a South African that job that pays 1.5. They have food on their table. They can take care of the minimum, bare minimum, than to take that money, exploit even a foreigner, give him even a half or even less of it, and deny the South African an opportunity.
Well,
because that
direct,
is what is happening.
You've given a more direct answer than Roger Jardine did last week. Come on, Pumi, it's true.
How?
It's true.
I mean, even government itself, in their informal, the EPWP program that they're having, they're not even paying that the regulated income of 3.5. You look at it, they're paying those people way less.
Right.
Why are they forcing every other person to pay that minimum salary when they can't even do it in the informal sector? I think if we really want to kill unemployment, we must do that. And one of the key things that we're proposing as well is the 24-hour economy. 24-hour economy.
What is that?
The level where South Africa is, and especially this affluent metros, your KZN, your Durban, your Joburg, etc., we should be operating like your London, your Tokyo, your Japan, your New York, etc. That 24-hour economy. I can come out of work 7 o'clock, still go to Sandton 9 o'clock, still go to a ShopRite Checkers anywhere, Cresta or somewhere in Giani, and buy. And that will have unemployment immediately, because already you're creating 3-hour shifts in a day. We as South Africans, vibrant as this economy is, the global economy and the biggest in Africa, by 7 o'clock, Gareth, you and I are at home watching TV, we're watching Generations or Yizo or soccer. All of us become unproductive.
That's also an issue of safety and security, and you haven't spoken about that yet.
You are going to deal with crime in that manner. You know why crime thrives? Because it's dark. After 7 is the conducive time. We've given time to a crime, etc. When police are working 24-7, everybody, security is working 24-7. We are at work 24-7. The economy is generating 24-7. There's no time where somebody's going to be lurking in the dark trying to create crime, because transportation is working 24-7. It's suddenly safer even for you to walk around, because it's happening.
It's busy.
You see, yes, we're going to have crime fighting. We've got policies that will deal with that. We'll put your cameras, whatever, but the fact that you don't have room to create this crime, you have to be very, very creative.
So let's just quickly talk, because I think there's a lot in the economy stuff that we can still unpack, but I don't want us to get boring. So traditional leaders.
Yes.
You don't like the way. No, I mean, it is. Even after budget day, Pumi, it can be boring if we go into too much detail. And Colleen has answered every question. I don't want to. Some of the comments have also said they didn't know about you before, but they're impressed with what you're saying. And of course, there are also critics. But traditional leaders, big part of South Africa, we put them in this house of traditional leaders, which is supposedly going to make a difference. It doesn't. It's really just lip service. Why are traditional leaders important, and how would you reform the way that we've got them represented at the moment?
Look, my desire, if we're to get the majority and be able to look into the Constitution, we must start by putting them in the Constitution. It was a big error that traditional leaders don't feature in our Constitution. Every other thing that we are doing is reactionary to them. And hence you find that even the government that we have undermines and their traditions and customs of how they even select their leaders. They're crying a lot about that, because a premier must select a chief or must endorse or recommend who must be appointed as a chief. That's not how we work traditionally. Traditional leaders have been relegated to report to a premier. When you look at traditional leaders in the Western scenario, even in the UK, you look at the Queen, she's above the Prime Minister. When the budget comes, that was the Queen, now we've got the King. They don't just endorse it, they are consulted, they give input. Our traditional leaders are crying around IDPs, how they are also implemented. They are just there to rubber stamp. And even, in fact, even whether they rubber stamp or not, constitutionally, there's nothing they can do. They're just consulted because it's respect and we just want to do it. But a municipality can go and do whatever they want in the traditional leaders' land without any of their approval, because the law empowers us empowers the municipality to do that. Even when they sit in council, those that have traditional leaders, I know Tshwane does have, they are given a seat there to sit in council. It's like they're watching a show. They have no input. They have no voting rights. They can't even say anything. They just sit there ceremoniously and then go home and you say, we've consulted traditional leaders. We think it's an insult to them. We have to review how we treat them.
And you would have the communities themselves play a role in electing these people to...
Already there are customs. You know, like we saw a classic example with King Misuzulu.
Mm.
You see, traditionally people know this is our chief. Even in Bakgatla, there's a huge fight going on right now between the community and what the provincial administration has put as a chief there. So allow the community, the people, they know who the bloodline are. Fights will always be there. This is, you know, chieftaincy in our tradition has always been a space of contention, but families know how to resolve this thing. And the customs and the traditions, they tell you, how do you select a chief? But one of the key things they're crying about is water rights as well. Most of them, they've got water that is passing through their villages that they have no water rights to. The water rights were historically, under the apartheid government, were given to commercial farmers who were mainly white. Yes, the government has messed it up trying to take that away and mm-hmm. we've got all sorts of issues. But they also want water rights because in that way, they're able, without having to depend on the municipality for water that is passing through them, assist their communities because the river passes through them. They can't touch it. So but they have to wait for the municipality to allocate water to them to be able to allocate
so
to them.
So are you proposing a different and parallel structure to municipality that is chieftaincy-based?
I'm not proposing a parallel structure. I'm proposing a way where we integrate them to have a voting right, to have a voice, not just to be observers.
But that's a constitutional change. How would that's you do why that I said 15 seats?
Yeah, that's what I said. My desire, it was my starting point, my desire, should we get enough numbers, the starting point will be to change the constitution and therefore flows out of the different legislation to give them those rights. But the simple things that you can do now, give them water rights. They want to be able to look at to look after their people. Water is very, it's an economic and a social.
It's important to mention this. I don't think we've spoken to any political parties who've even brought up water rights, but it is going to become a contentious issue in the future. Pretty much guaranteed of that, right?
Yeah, with the shortage of water now, yeah. People need to be able to control the flow of water. Remember, traditionally, in most African cultures, water is not just what you and I maybe use for drink. It's also, they've got customs that they use water for. You know, different things. They've got different beliefs around water, and which they've expressed to us. And that's why they want to be able to control the flow of water, especially if it passes through their jurisdiction. They should have the right, because it's in their territory, you see.
All right, well, we've only got 10 minutes left. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. We've been speaking to Colleen. There are a couple more questions here. We can get to some of those just now. Is there anything else you wanted to go with, Pums? Because I do think that we've got very straight-up answers so far. So it's nothing – you haven't dodged any questions.
No.
Is there anything that you want to say that you think we haven't covered?
I do have this to ask. You speak a lot about young people. if you were to talk directly to a 27-year-old South African listening now, is your pitch to why on the 29th of May they must walk into that booth and find your name and your logo and put their cross next to it? What is that?
I think this is very important. The young people, and most of them who are eligible to vote and who were 2019, did not vote. The government that we are sitting with is a government that was chosen by your mothers, your fathers, your aunties, your grandmothers. And those people are benefiting from the government that they have chosen. They've got their grants, whether they are happy or not. And if you want a government of your choice that is going to serve you, go out and vote. I'm not saying SARA or any other new party is going to give you 100% of what you're looking for. But for goodness sake, can we stop complaining about there's too many parties, there's this and this, I'm confused. Make up your mind, go and put your cross next to a party that you think closely or resembles or represents what it is that as a young person in South Africa, the kind of future that we're looking for is going to bring for you. This whole notion of a nonchalant attitude and, you know, I'm not going to vote because I'm not happy, I don't want this, etc. Stop it, because you did not even vote for what is happening right now. It's about time that young people reclaim. For me, I want to talk to young people that says, you know what, we voted and now we are not getting what we voted for. That's a conversation that I want to have. But those that stayed at home and they have a lot to say, democracy will happen without you, whether you like it or not. It's going to happen on the 29th of May, and the results are going to come out. If you want a different result, get off your seat, stop drinking alcohol, stop complaining about joblessness, go out, help us to change this nation. You may not like Colleen as a person, but if you think that I can contribute to changes, I can bring a different dynamic, let's go out there. The danger, Gareth, that we're facing, and if young people don't rise now, we're going to end up with a parliament on the 30th of May. We're going to end up with a parliament with Jacob Zuma, with Ace Magashula, Karl Niehaus, Mkhwebane, you name them, Julius Malema. We're going to end up with Cyril Ramaphosa settling scores at the expense of the taxpayers' money and our future. All of them are going there to settle scores with the ANC of Ramaphosa. We may not be your favorite, but our hearts are in the right place. You criticize us or not, we want to go and make a difference. We don't have the magic wand to fix everything, but we want to bring fresh leaders. You may not know who they are, because that's exactly why we don't want you to have those that you know. They've done nothing for you. We're bringing new people, fresh ideas, engineers, professionals, competent people, people that you can interview with merit. We are looking at 300 CVs. Three out of all of those 300 CVs, 200 are unemployed graduates. Some of them masters, some of them busy with honors, etc. People that can come and add value to this government with brilliant ideas. You should see some of the proposals that they've put in there. Give them an opportunity.
Someone says in the comments, Sanel says, random question, is this person related to Judge Makubele?
No, I'm not related.
I told you, get all the questions here, right?
I've gotten that one before. No, we're not related. Yeah.
Is she Gayton's sister, says Noluvuyo?
No, because I actually don't believe in Abahambe foreign stuff that Gayton is talking about as well. We have got a different approach when it comes to foreigners. I love Gayton. I've worked with him. He's a good brother, but I don't believe we're not an indecent nation.
Chulu says she's making mum threats now when you're telling young people to get out there and stop drinking.
Mum threats.
Stop drinking, get out there and vote. Okay. I mean, listen, people are enjoying this.
Yeah.
And I do think that settling of scores with Cyril Ramaphosa's ANC is a very good point. Mm. There's a lot of people who are doing that. That's what it is.
Wow.
I mean, there may be scores to settle, right?
Yeah.
Lamula in the comments says, vote Sarah. Okay.
Thank you, Lamula.
I think Lamula might already be in the party. I'm just guessing. I've never seen Lamula in the comment. Have you ever seen Lamula in the comment section?
Oh, Lamula, you've given yourself away.
Lamula is a plant.
Any comments from you on, Lamula, you on made yesterday's budget with Enoch Godongwana? Anything you want to throw in
Look,
there?
You can't even comment on anything. A budget that is running on a deficit. It's not even worth commenting on. It's not worth the paper that is written on. I think if we don't sort out the debt issue, we're running a huge risk. If South Africa doesn't sort out its trade relationship with its important partners, we're running a serious risk. That budget is just going to blow in our face. So that's all I have to say about that.
Azalea says, you're amazing.
There are people quoting scripture there in the comments.
Amen. Amen.
Fear of the Lord.
We bring God back to schools, to the communities. And I want you guys, Christians, let's bring God back. And let's stop fighting Israel. Let's stop fighting anybody.
So a lot of people will be asking, because some of the things you say may overlap with some of the other parties and what they're doing. Why didn't you join a Kenneth Meshwe, a DA, a Herman Mashaba? You decided to go on your own.
Yeah, I did, because there are several factors. DA, I don't believe they are fully representative. I have worked with the DA and I found they have a lot of work to do in becoming non-racial in practice. And they've agitated a lot of senior black leaders that have gone out of the window. And the fact that they have put on the table still resonates with me, having seen the DA. Why I didn't join Mashaba, I just think it's too arrogant. He's missed an opportunity. It was a party that I would have joined. I don't think Action SA has lived up to the promise that we thought it will live up to. And I love a lot of people that I've worked with within Action SA, Michael Beaumont, etc. And I wish them well. You know, I think we'll join forces. I would love to work with them in a coalition, but to join them under Mashaba, I don't think so. Why didn't I join? Who's the third one?
Achang. Kenneth Meshwe.
Especially because of ACDP. The Christians.
Yes. Yeah. You know, that's an important question. I never really thought about it, why we didn't join ACDP. It was, I can think about it. We can maybe form a coalition. I have nothing against
ACDP. And the multi-party charter, I mean, would you talk to them?
Oh, yes, I would talk to them, because I think we align in terms of our policies. We may differ in implementation here and there, but we are very, very much aligned in ideologically, etc. They may not like me. I don't think I'm their favorite because of what happened in the city of Joburg. Helen Zille still holding on to that. She was suing me, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the case is there ongoing.
What's she suing you for?
200,000 rand for calling her a racist. I don't think I was the only person in history. I mean, I just borrowed from some of the phrases that were already on the internet, and we've demonstrated that. But I have a lot of respect for her and what she's done with the DA and what they're doing. But and like I said, ideologically, we align. We don't align with most of what the ANC is going, the direction they're going.
Snaye says here, we need strict people to run this country. I love her strict tone when she answered that question from Pumi.
What did they say? Strict mum vibes.
Mum vibes. Right.
Strict mum.
There we go. Strict mum.
I'm a mother of two boys, so I know how to deal with you all, especially these men. I'm telling you, that's why in council, there was no disorder in council. And we have to have that strict management. That's why the leadership in our country is so poor. Cyril cannot even call the cabinet to order. You know, all the
Would you trim some of the cabinet?
Oh, yeah. That's very important. We want to trim from 29 to 20 ministers. We're going to save around 60 billion rand on that per annum. Take it to the grants. We're also removing the deputy ministers. We don't think it's important. We'll save another 40 billion rand on that. If a minister cannot perform their job effectively on their own, they are not fit to be there. We don't need deputy ministers. I've worked with these people. There's nothing that they are doing in there. It was just cadre deployment. Let's get ministers.
It's in the constitution. It's constitutional. Look, so they have that role because it's in the constitution. It is catered deployment because the ANC has been the biggest party up until now. But it's the constitution of the country. It requires it. Well, it must be changed, like traditional leaders. Pauline's got big goals.
I mean, really, is it saving us? There's a lot of things in the constitution, by the way, that we also don't do, right? As long as you're not violating the constitution, you know, some of the things we really are not implementing as a country that are in the constitution, you know. So, yeah, even voting constitutionally, we're supposed to vote for a president, you know, as well. So there are a lot of things that we can look at and legally you may find provisions to say, yes, it's in the constitution. You're not violating the law, but you may be silent on it.
So Canton is in the comments this morning because he isn't here in person. And he says, good to have a politician who understands basic economics. We're going to end it on that. Colleen, thank you. It's a great pleasure to have you here. And I think you've spoken very clearly about where you stand on things.
Thank you.
I saw the posters. It took me a while to figure out what was going on. I think you've been very clear about what's on your agenda. I wish you well. I hope you get somewhere near your 10%. goal. I always say to every politician who comes in here, I hope you get what you want, because if there are enough people who vote for you,
10% is 40 seats.
It's a lot of people.
10%
it's a lot of people
of the votes equals 40 seats, because we've got 400 seats in the parliament. So 15 is just under 4% of the votes.
We're going to aim for that. And I want to encourage people to go and oppose the Bella Bill, the Basic Education Laws and Amendment Bill. Very important. Hearings are happening from tomorrow. Really, this is my last word. Go and oppose it. And if you don't do that...
Why are you opposing it out of interest?
First and foremost, I think our focus should be on improving our numeracy, literacy in our curriculum. We are ranked the lowest, even in terms of STEM and science in school. In South Africa, in the world, we are ranked the lowest. Infrastructure, the lowest. Why do we want to introduce sex education to children that are 5? Why do we want to teach our children LGBTQI at school? I respect that community. They've got space where they operate, but I don't want children to go to school to learn those things. There are a lot that we can be improving in our education. We've lowered the standard too much to accommodate incompetency, and it hasn't said, we can't even export brains out of this country. We are not a producing country. We can't export products. We can't even export experts that are running Fortune 500 companies all over the world because of the type of education that Angie Motshekga and the cohorts have created here. Bella is a disaster. It must be opposed. Let's focus on improving the quality of our education and the infrastructure.
You'll be there?
I'm going to be there, Sarah. Yes, Sarah's going to be there tomorrow. We are opposing it, and we hope that we're going to receive support.
Well, Carl says, the Bella Bill is horse shit. She's 100% right to oppose it. Now I like her even more. All right, Colleen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very nice to have you here, Colleen Makubele. Mm,
thank you. Thank you for me. Carl. Thank you, Carl.
Why are you saying Carl?
Am I your calling? Carl, if you've shaken Carl from the DA, that's all I have to say.
Carl says, I hope they get 15%. All right, so... All round, I think you've been a hit this morning.
Thank you.
Seems the audience enjoy you, so let's hope you get those numbers.
Thank you so much.
All right, everybody. That's all we got time for today. That is The Burning Platform. We will have more political leaders for you in the next couple of weeks. We've got quite a roster to get through before we get to the elections.
We've got 14 weeks.
Little time. Much to do. 14 weeks. All right, Pumi, we'll see you next week, Thursday. Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Cheers. Bye-bye.